Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, all of Freedomizer Radio. Let me give a shout out to the chat room. How y'all doing? And can y'all all hear the little guest? Well, I shouldn't say guest host. Kind of impromptu host here for a brief moment. KT. First off, I'd like to say that thank you all for coming by early. In order to be able to get a good seat available for Proof Negative and DemCAD that will be showing up at the normal Proof time with his interview with Bob Chapman for this month. You know, there was a little bit of an issue there last time due to the fact that you had the different show changeovers and phone numbers and all. But, you know, they got all that straightened out. And so Bob Chapman, international forecaster, is going to be back on and interviewing once again with Proof to talk about all those things going on in the world, going on with politics and the like. There's a lot of news going on out there, and you can't miss. You can't miss what's going on with the election, right? And so I wanted to briefly entertain a bit of a topic on the right and left paradigm that's kind of out there, because we have this concept that there is a seat available in the Senate, and it has been dominated by a liberal. You know, Ted Kennedy's been in that seat for years. You know, In the time frame it has been for the American country, the grand experiment, I believe there was like some sort of a calculation that he's been there for like an entire quarter of it. I mean, when you consider that, when you consider the percentage of one man sitting in a position of power in a country that was supposed to be ruled by the people continually. You know, that, I don't know, that tells you something. It tells you something about what happened, what's possible when people stand by. And I think it's a good idea, possibly, to kind of revisit a little bit of the news now for the moment and see what's going on in the possibilities of the left-right paradigm. And I'm gonna let you all know that, yeah, this is KT on the air briefly. We at Freedomizer Radio, we have the freedom to freedomize anytime we wish to for freedomizers to bring freedom to all the freedomists. So that's what we're going to do. And so we kind of took that opportunity, you know, Eric and I, to go ahead and let you all know that we appreciate your devotion coming by in Freedomize Radio, and wanted to give you a bit of a message before Bob Chapman comes to be interviewed by Proof Negative and Dimcad, which will be on at the normal Proof Negative time. But you all knew that. So really, I wanted to get towards that, this concept of this news and this election and what's going on, because you have a lot of people right now. And, you know, I've been watching some of the interviews of the people at the polls and whatnot, and they were saying that they no longer wanted that old regime. One couple said that they were voting for Coakley, and she was the Democrat representative that would be running, and that they were no longer going to vote for her because the Kennedys got involved. For some reason, you know, they got involved, and then the quote of the gentleman was, "And they're not going to run our life." Now, isn't that interesting? You know, that's a man who knows some freedom. You know, he ought to stop by the chat room, you know, talk to us a bit. He seems like he deserves to stop by on us and us have a chat with him, because he's precisely the type of individual that we're talking about, who's waking up to what's going on. So, but let's think about this a minute further, because we have Brown now, and Brown is running on the Republican ticket, and he may very well win. Is this, I lay the question to you, is this a move to freedom? Because there's definitely a possibility of it not being a move to freedom, but a move to complacency. Now, I'm going to step back for a moment and talk about what happened with the conservatives during the Bush-Cheney presidential era. Let's see how that has led to us to this moment now. And this, of course, this is coming from my point of view. But I think you'll see where I'm coming from. We had Bush in office, and he was very conservative and very Christian based, very prayerful, you know, or at least that's how he came off. And of course, everything can be seen through, you know, a pane of glass. You know, this is what we see, but we are on the other side of the pane of glass. We're not there with the person. You know, we're not there in his chambers. We don't know exactly what goes on, and so I leave that to you, that I'm going off of what I could see. And Christians and conservatives were aligned behind Bush. They believed that they knew his value system, and that it was, you know, high moral values. You know, oftentimes he would be seen as a businessman, you know, oil man, you know, and that kind of sort. But within the Christian and conservative movement, he was one of them. And he was putting forward a value system, I'm going to do the right thing that has to be done with certain issues. Correct? Now, what happened during this time frame? It was a huge turn of the media, which could be coined the mass media or the liberal media. And during this time frame, he was, for lack of a better word, he was demonized. He was demonized. He was seen as the bad guy, right? I'll also say that it was not just him, but the value systems involved that were demonized. Now, when you look at voters, and you look at people, and you look at everyone who is seeing him as a bad guy, right? Because if you are an elitist, You don't need everybody. If you're an elitist who also depends on votes and who's running kind of under the system and under the radar, and you're creating agendas and you're creating a system in which you can sort of get into that power structure and then lead by authority, like no longer actually not leading from the front, but leading from the rear, and leading from the rear at the tip of a sword, right? Not only do you not need one particular part of that group, you do need a group. You need a vast group of people who can be voters, because you only have your own voting group. So what this lends to is having to make sure the other side is seen as wrong, right? What happens here is it's not just, like I was saying, not just Bush and Cheney as being seen as the bad guys, but their values, their systems, and what they possibly represent, and everyone else like that. Now, that would be your Christians, your conservatives, and those who had a singular mindset, a dedicated mindset, one who would look at, something like the Constitution, and they would grasp hold of it firmly, and they would decide that this was the right thing to do, and that they wanted freedom, and freedom at any cost. If you then call these people the bad guys, and you have a huge group in the middle, some independents, you can then take those independents and you can sway them, saying, hey, those are the bad guys. Guess what? They're big business. They're Christians. They're kind of out there. They're far on the right. So we want change. And that's what we have seen. We have seen where there is a good segment of our population and a mindset. There is a thought and a mindset of conservative values, of freedom values, that has been the bad guys now. And if you think that way, you're a bad guy, and you're also, you become extreme. You are identified with that old regime, you know. Or if you're not identified with that old regime, possibly a new regime, a conspiracy regime, some other types of things that are extreme, you know, conservative, Christian, and that's, you know, that's, I don't know, it got us here into all these problems and troubles and et cetera, and so that's the bad guy. So now you've got a vast middle group, and you're elected. You're voted into office through change, and many more people in Congress with you. And now you can affect that change. And now you've actually gotten into the system. And now those elitists who have been backing this up, if you go along with those theories, those elitists then being able to place one segment of groups, just by the sheer fact that there was a leader that represented those groups, off to the side, they now have this other, you know, liberal progressive group. And the liberal progressive group is the socialist movement type group. You know, you cannot use the conservative movement if you're an elitist. It's really, really hard to do. You have to do it, because as soon as you start to do that, the freedom-loving, constitution-mindedness of those particular people just turn. I mean, you know, boom, they just turn around on you. Can't be done. It has to be done on a collective, communistic type of mindset. And so once you get that mindset going and you get that movement and people then are leaning that way, you can see it coming. And we can see that coming now. We can see that ball rolling, you know, further and faster all the time and every day. And that is where it leads us to this election. Because you're seeing people kind of turn away from that. how then is that used? There's lots of speculation. Will the ball be just shoved down the hill faster? The ball of tyranny. Will the decision be made? It has to be more. Or will the subterfuge still take place? Will the one seat be taken, but knowing that they have to then continually make that concept of demonization to go forward? I'm going to take a moment here to get some comments. And the number for the show is 347-324-3704. And if you wish to call in and possibly talk about how this right-left paradigm is now leading us towards something that has become a right paradigm. And then with the right paradigm that has become the bad guys, there's now an open left paradigm. And now the left paradigm is being kind of seen for what it is, kind of seen that it's not necessarily in the greater aspects of in America with a constitution, and how that can affect us. You know, there's about 30 different lawmakers in different states. Let me rephrase that. There's about 30 different states with lawmakers within them, their own congresses. They are contemplating getting their individual citizens out of a government health care run program. Now, is that not awesome? Now, here's an interesting side note, and it's my own idea, on the order of being written to my senator, so that he can bring this up. It's kind of more of a hardball just to throw into the middle of the ring, and cause some bruises to individuals. If unions are not going to take the so-called Cadillac tax in the healthcare plan as presented by Obama, and they get an out, what then would stop a state, if the healthcare bill was placed across the country, a state from then saying, within our state, all unions will have such a tax put on them that is the same as the other people? Those that do have a Cadillac tax, so that if your healthcare tax is really high for the individual person who has a really good healthcare plan, but then you have unionized people, well, then we're just going to go ahead and tax those and put those into our state coffers, because this is going to be taxing our own state. And so we're going to be making some money off of it, and it makes everything equal between our state's citizens. Right? Makes sense to me. We obviously, federal government and Obama is gonna shout foul, because they don't want that. I mean, the whole reason that they're there is for unions. Unions are a small socialistic system. That's what they want. And they want to continue it and make a workers' party. You know, we all know what workers' party historically has led to. The Communist Workers' Party. So if they then cry foul on this, then what happens is you get the concept of saying, you can't do that, right? You can't do that. We are the federal government. We're the ones that established this health care plan. You can't make your own in-state addendums to it. The state can just say, we have our own state's rights. We're a sovereign state. And it moves it up to the state's rights issue. Phenomenal. States are looking into the constitutionality of this. This shows you once again where people and freedoms are starting to be seen. What has to happen, though, is we have to not see a rise of the right. We have to not see a rise of the Republicans. Any group that becomes in power can then be controlled again. you know, because the one was controlled in my scenario in order to make them the bad guys and to make any people like them the bad guys. And then what happens next is the others, the one that will actually help the agenda of the elites, they're used, you know, to progress for their agenda. What has to happen is freedom has to become on the rise. That is the important part. For us to take an election such as this that is happening now, and if Brown is elected, not as a Republican win or even a conservative win, but a win towards not that thing over there, the tyranny. Like the man said when he said the Kennedys got involved and they were backing Coakley, they would not run our life. That is where his vote was for not having somebody run his life and not to have a family run the life, a family call the shots and tell them where their vote was going to go. So that person then that's going to be on the next ballots, be them D's or R's or I's, I being independents, or even C's, C being Constitution Party, L for libertarians, knowing who represents freedom, who represents the Constitution, who represents those who do not have control and who can resist them. That, my friends, that is the key point to this election. And where we'll see here, we will see within a small group, not only if the people can get forward, the possibility of that freedom, at least in saying we don't want that old regime. We want something different and new. And at the moment, maybe the Republican candidate Brown represents that newness, that freedom that we want. But make sure that it doesn't stop there. It goes to who represents the freedom. If anybody wants to jump in here before KT goes ahead and signs on out, so that we can have another bit of rest of the radio waves, and as we wait for proof to get online and have our much anticipated interview with Bob Chapman, co-hosted by DemCAD, then by all means, go ahead and give me a call at 347-324-3704. I'm going to leave the phone lines open for a while longer and maybe come back to you briefly with a little bit more news, a little bit more commentary. And in the meantime, let's just wait for proof, and we will do that with his a little bit of his own artistic value. You know, I hope you guys enjoyed a little bit of that left-right commentary and how it applies possibly to, you know, freedomizers and how we need to make sure we keep looking for that concept that we don't return back to just finding that other bad guy, that the left doesn't become the bad guy, and instead of you know, socialism, we get fascism, and that's the important part. One quick thing, because we have a few minutes, and then I want to leave enough of a gap where Proof can go ahead, get in, and set himself up. It's this concept I keep hearing, because there are some in the mass media that calls a vast portion of the populace just ignorant. They're ignorant. They're stupid. You know, they're hillbillies, and they're beer drinkers, and just really, really downplaying. And once again, that ties back into the bad guys, right? And I wanted to make sure I played a little bit of Proof's music. And soon we're going to be able to load up some of my own stuff, because I play. And in no means take this kind of future commentary that's about to come up as me saying, you know, hey, look at all I can do. But within my family, matter of fact, I'll open it up to my family, so it's not just all me. Within my family, we have the ability to play a penny whistle, which is a small flute, a little Irish flute, a piano, a Bodhran drum, guitar, bass guitar, mandolin, a bit on the concertina, and the violin, or more likely the fiddle in our particular case, because that's the way we lean, towards the Irish folk type stuff. The point here is, it is, like I said, Irish folk, so it's an older, it's a bit historical, and yet very artistic, you know. Proof has some techno and very artistic, and I've come to enjoy it. You know, it wasn't something that I was keen on, you know, the first time or two I heard it. But then I'm like, hey, this is pretty neat stuff, and it's great background. You don't get those type of people then who are ignorant and stupid and low-minded, right, within the freedomizing movement. I decline then, of course, to agree with that statement. And I'm sure many of you are the same way. You're writing poetry. You're eloquent. I've heard many of you on the phone. You're not ill-informed. You know what's going on in the world around you. You know history. Many of you know, ancient. Look at Doc. Doc knows ancient history. You know, I'm the same way. Ancient, very learned people. And you then see then where we're not that way. And that's just something I wanted to point out. It was, you know, kind of quick, easy, kind of simple, but just kind of to take this concept and reject it and say no, you know, no, we are not that way. We are artistic. We're high-minded. We happen to like the Constitution, and you know what? We understand the Constitution. There is a type of writing in the Constitution that you have to read. You have to read and you have to understand. It may not be easy to read because it's in between sort of the old Shakespearean English and the English in use today. Yet, we can sit down and understand it. Unfortunately, the elites, either they understand it and they don't want to, or B, they don't understand it. And I think many of them even don't. I think many of them that are just following the elites, the followers, they don't understand it. They read the Constitution. It makes no sense to them. That's why they think it's irrelevant. Au contraire, not with this group. And I thank you for it. And I'm having terrible time in order to monitor the chat room, but that's okay, because I'm not going to be sticking around any longer. I've got a little bit of food that I need to get. I know the rest of you are trying to stock up on your food storage right within your own system, so that you're prepared and you're ready and you're able in order to grasp everything that the proof is in Bob Chapman and Demcat are going to be bringing to you very, very soon. So on that note, I'm going to go ahead and let you guys go and accept this time when there's silence, much like there has been silence before, for your own meditations, because we need to stop and reflect sometimes in our busy schedules, the busy news, everything's being thrown at us, and relax a bit. Okay, you know that there's going to be some time here. It's going to be, you know, a quiet time. So turn off something else. Turn off something else if it is on. Take 15 minutes. You know, think, reflect, and so that you're in that contemplative mode and you're not always reactionary, because that's important. Never be so reactionary. I mean, if you are prepared, you should not be reactionary. So prepare yourself. You're not reactionary. And we can go things forward with cool, clear heads. With that, KT is going to go ahead and sign out and give you maybe a little bit of something. Well, you know what? In lieu of Bob Chapman, let's run the Bob Chapman ad, and we'll be out of here. You all have a great evening.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident your financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of International.
All right, everybody. This is NSM Doc, and I thought we were on air yesterday, and we told everybody that we wouldn't have a startup time until 5 p.m. tonight. In which case, Jenny Hatch will be coming in. She should be in here in about 10 minutes. I have had computer problems all afternoon. It's been crashing over and over and over. So this is the first time I've been able to actually get online and talk to you guys. So I just wanted to let you know that this 2-hour time slot will be filled next week. I'm not sure whether it will be Dr. Mark Taylor or whether it will be End Times Watchman. As you know, he's going to be my guest Friday. And tomorrow, we're going to have Alan Phillips from VaccineRights.com. He's going to come into my show at about 5 Pacific. That would be 8 Eastern. And he's going to carry over into the first hour of Proof Show as well. So we'll have him for 2 hours. And then, of course, the first hour will belong to Shepherd Ambulus. A lot of you guys know him from Alex Jones. He is the guy that brought the mass graves footage to Alex Jones back last April. And he will be our guest. He's done extensive research on underground bases and also more mass graves. And so tomorrow is going to be an awesome, awesome, awesome interview starting at 4 Pacific, 7 Eastern. And, of course, before me is supposed to be Noel of the Bunker Report, and I will be contacting him in a bit to make sure that that takes place. And if it doesn't, of course, I will fill that hour as I have been. So I have temporarily remedied my computer problems for now. It isn't that I've fixed them. It's that it just hasn't crashed again in the last 10 minutes. So I guess kick back, relax for a few minutes, and in about, I would say, 10 minutes, you will be hearing from Miss Jenny Hatch, and I look forward to hearing from her. It is her first broadcast. And so with that said, I'm going to go ahead and sign off, and I will be back in to listen to her. I want to thank you guys all for hanging out in here all this time, and I will see you in a little bit. All right. And if somebody could put Freedomizer in the chat room there to let me know if all of you have heard me, that would be very helpful to me before I sign off. Looks like my chat's frozen, so I'm going to have to refresh real quick. And once I see that someone has heard me, well, then I'm going to go on ahead and step on out of here. So. All right. I'm not sure anyone has heard me because I see nothing going on in the chat room. So hopefully you guys will refresh here in a moment. Anyhow, I'm going to step on out, and I'll see you guys in a bit.
Hey, Jenny, is that you? Are you in? I'm sure that's you. I know you don't go on for another 7 minutes. I just wanted to let you know that I was in right here. So I'm gonna announce you, and to anybody that can hear me, If you haven't refreshed yet, please refresh your screen. I see that Ms. Hatch has called in, and so you're going to have to refresh, or you won't be able to hear her as you've been listening to the show without the host in and chatting in the chat room. So if you could all refresh your screen, she's due to start here in about 6 minutes. So yeah, cool. All right. Thanks, Mop. If you could let everybody know that you can hear, thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, so Jenny Hatch is going to be coming in about 6 minutes. And, of course, this is NSM Doc. If you're on the line right now, Ms. Hatch, I just came in real quick because I noticed that some folks couldn't hear, and I wanted them to refresh their screens before you came in and started your broadcast. So that 443 number there is me that's in the caller queue. And I'm going to go ahead and mute myself because you're unmuted and ready to go. Okay, everyone, so it's going to be about 5 minutes, and then she's going to come in. She'll be coming in live, so I'm going to step away here, and I'm going to mute my mic and enjoy the show, everyone. Thank you. Okay, yeah, some of you are saying nothing right now. That's just because I muted my mic. Miss Hatch is due to come in 4 minutes, and I wanted to have the air clear for her. And I want her to know that if she can hear me, if she can hear me right now, that I don't see her listed in the chat as host yet, and so you won't be able to play any of the music files. If you would like me to do that for you, at least here at the beginning, I don't mind doing that. And for everybody else, her show is going to come in here in about 3 minutes. She's going to come in live. So, and I see that she's already called in as host. So she's set up to roll, and her mic is unmuted, so she'll be able to just take off. So. For all you guys that can hear me, there's going to be, about 2 minutes of dead air, and then Miss Hatch will be coming in here at Free the Miser Radio. So I'm going to go ahead and play Bob Chapman, and then she should be ready to come in right after that.
Are you wondering about your retirement portfolio? Are you confident your financial advisor is experienced enough to combat climbing interest rates, taxes, and inflation? Stop guessing and go to the expert, Robert Chapman of International Forecaster. When you subscribe to the International Forecaster, you get Robert Chapman's 45 years of experience, concise investment recommendations. Who needs sugar-coated excuses when you can get the hard facts and proven investment leads you can't get anywhere else? Subscribe now for a free introductory copy to Robert Chapman's International Forecaster. Experience the difference. Subscribe now online at theinternationalforecaster.com. When you subscribe, you can email Robert Chapman directly to obtain tailored investment advice just for you. Don't wait. Get online and subscribe today. theinternationalforecaster.com.
The Proof Negative Show. We are freedomizers, freedomizing freedoms to the freedomist for freedoming freedoms to people who simply just want their freedom back. The Proof Negative Show. Weekdays, 9 to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 Pacific. Right here on Freedomizer Radio.
All right, folks. We got about 1 minute left. So I want to announce that there is the Lion's Den, of course, is our regular Friday, Saturday, Sunday show with Eric Lovely. And he comes in at the 4 Pacific to 6 Pacific time slot all three of those days of the week. And, of course, you know my show is Hardtail News with NSM Doc, and I'm on Monday and Wednesdays from 4 to 6 and on Fridays from 6 to 9 Pacific. You guys can adjust all those for Eastern time by adding 3 hours to them. So with that said, I'm going to have to yield the mic over to Miss Hatch for her to begin her show, and I will see you guys later. All right. I don't know if Ms. Hatch can hear me. I see her in. It says that she's called in, but I can't hear her at all. So I guess what I'm going to do here is I'm going to play a song, and I'm going to try and dial out to her and see if I can't get a hold of her real quick. So if you guys will just hang out for a minute and check out this song, and we'll be right back in just a moment.
Doc, and I see that you're
All right, folks. I don't know if what happened there is going on with Miss Hatch. I couldn't hear her. I saw that she was called in for a moment, but nobody could hear her, and I couldn't hear her either. So if you're listening right now, if you could call the 347-324-3704 number, and I guess I can get you in like that. I don't know if you were having trouble signing in or what, but right now we have nobody called in. So what I'm going to do is I have to hang up now to access the switchboard so that I can play another song. So if you guys will just hang tight for a minute, and we'll be back in.
All right, so I'm back in now. I hope you guys can all hear me. For some reason, we lost her, and I don't know why. Her audio wasn't working. So if you can hear me in the chat right now, if you can hear me in the chat right now, please somebody type Freedomizer in the chat room. I'm not sure what's going on with her phone right now, so I'm going to cut to another break. And I'm going to bring us back in. So if you'll just hold on just for a minute. Ah, it looks like I've got her in now. She's got her hand up, so I'm going to unmute her right now. Hello, Ms. Hatch. Are you there? You're live with me now on air.
I am, and boy, this has been a comedy of errors. It just felt like for the last 8 minutes I was just kind of scrambling, and I apologize to anyone. Listen, I hate to waste anybody's time, but this is new for me, and I thought I was ready to go. I started talking, and I just couldn't hear myself right at 6 o'clock, and so I started to kind of panic, so sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. That happens a lot, and I don't understand, because, see, I had called in the call-in number. I was actually on the line that you were on, and I was actually trying to speak to you, and I couldn't hear you either. So,
no, I could hear you just fine. I could tell you weren't hearing me, and I was like, okay, what do I do? And I'm happy to do the show right now from a caller number instead of wasting people's time while I try to recall in as the host. Is that okay?
That's certainly fine. What I'll do is I'll mute my microphone. And I'll listen when you want to go to break. I think since we're getting a 10-minute late start, don't even worry about going to break. Just go ahead and fill your spot till 6, and I'll mute my microphone, and you can have the floor. All right, Ms. Hatch. And I know how that goes. I know how that goes getting signed in. So without further ado, everyone, Ms. Jenny Hatch.
Thank you so much, Doc. It's such an honor to be a part of this network. I'm a complete novice at radio. I've just done a few radio shows myself, and so as I learn this, please be patient. But I did want to take the opportunity for this first show to share with all of you who are listening my freedom journey. This has been quite a journey for me that's taken me to some places that when I was a teenager, I never would have expected that my life would turn out the way that it has. But I thought I would just share with you my journey and then some of my goals for this weekly radio show. I was born in the Detroit area in 1968. In 1967, you may recall, there were some riots in the Detroit area. My mother was expecting me when these riots took place in 1967. and my parents' home was located about 20 minutes from the place where the worst of the rioting happened. This was a very frightening experience. My mom had grown up in California in a quiet little town called Riverside, and although my dad was from the Detroit area, Michiganders had never seen anything like what was going on that summer of 1967. So I was born with that kind of overlay of the Vietnam War and all of this chaos in the country, and I believe that feeling of chaos was a part of me from the very beginning. My parents are Mormons, and I am too, and our church has sent a message out to the members for the last 90 years telling them to have a supply of food and be as self-sufficient from the government as possible. That's just been a theme for the members of our church. And before my parents moved back to Michigan, my dad had been a full-time seminary teacher for the church for 3 years. And anyone who's involved in Mormon circles knows that these seminary teachers have a reputation of being some of the best scriptorians in the church. And so my dad had a good grounding of the end times prophecies from the Bible and from the other scriptures that we use. After this event in 1967, our family decided to become self-sufficient. And so I grew up in an atmosphere of my mom always putting in food supplies. We always had loaded guns in a little closet in our utility room. And we had a huge garden, and my mother did tons of preserving. And when I was 7 years old, they finally made the investment in a wheat grinder, and my mom started really cooking from scratch all of our whole grains that they had stored, and she was constantly had a pot of beans on the stove, and it was just the environment that I grew up in was one of using our foods from the garden, cooking from scratch, and taking as much personal responsibility financially as we could. And so, again, growing up in this environment, I think, grounded me for the type of lifestyle that we're living now. As I grew, I always felt drawn to survival stories. And some of my favorite books were stories of survival, and not just books like The Last Babylon, which talks about survival after a nuclear war or other types of books of that nature, but I was also drawn to freedom literature. And growing up in the home I did, my parents were always very politically aware, and they always voted, but I was introduced to the writings of Ayn Rand when I was a senior in high school. There was a guy I was dating and hanging out with who was really into the Rand books, and he had a big influence on me. And so I read those books, Atlas Shrugged, The Fountainhead, We the Living, as the very tender age of 17. And these libertarian writings also had a profound impact on my thinking and the way I viewed the world. And, you know, a couple of years after I left home, I met my husband, and I'd always wanted to be a mother of a large family. And when we met, we decided we were going to have 12 kids. I mean, that was what was in our heart, was to just go for it with this big family. And when Paul and I got married in 1988, I was 20 years old, and I really was so naively confident that motherhood was just going to be a breeze for me. I was the oldest daughter of 8 kids and grew up in this home where my mother was always pregnant and nursing, and just, you know, felt like I knew what needed to be known to have a great, successful time as a mother and a homemaker. After my daughter was born in 1988, I felt myself slipping emotionally and physically. There was something off in my body and in my mind, but I couldn't put my finger on it. And it was this year at church when we were studying the New Testament in our Sunday school classes. And I remember this one day in particular. It was in February of 1989. And I was sitting in my daughter's nursery in her bedroom, nursing her and reading our Sunday school lesson for the next Sunday. And the Sunday school lesson was from the text in Matthew chapter 24. And those of you who are biblically aware know that this is the chapter of scripture where Jesus' apostles come to him and they say, you know, we know that you're going to die and you're going to come again, but we want to hear about the time when you come in your glory. And they specifically use the word glory, implying the later end times return of the Savior. And they said, what's going to be happening in the world when you come back? And Matthew 24 is pretty much all Jesus Christ outlining the various things that would be going on in the world when he comes again. So I was sitting there nursing my brand new baby. She was about 8 weeks old. And I came to verse 19. And verse 19 says, "Woe unto those who are with child and do give suck in that day, those women who are pregnant and breastfeeding." And as I read that scripture, it felt like I was being pounded on the head by the Lord. And the Holy Spirit whispered to me, and he said, "This is your generation. This is for you. There's going to be some extremely difficult times for you as a mother as you're trying to give birth to your babies and nurse them. And I want you," and this is, I take it as personal revelation from the Lord, "I want you to become self-sufficient in your mothering." And I was thunderstruck. I was like, well, it's funny to me now, but my first conscious thought after I had this impression was, I don't have time to go to medical school. That cracks me up now because, you know, I've so much divorced my life from the medical profession, it's not even funny. But that was my first conscious thought. I'm a busy stay-at-home mom. I don't have time to go to medical school to learn the things that they know so that I can be medically self-sufficient. And that was my thinking back then, 21 years ago. A couple of weeks after this incident, and it's an incident that still is a, you know, profound spiritual highlight in my life where I felt a direct guidance from the Lord to go down a certain path. A couple of weeks later, I had a nervous breakdown. I was not doing well physically. I was messing with my diet a lot, trying to do some things that I felt would make me healthier. I was doing some fasting and trying to get healthier, but was not really aware of the calorie and protein needs of a woman who's nursing a baby, which are significant. And so throughout these, and I was obsessed, absolutely obsessed with getting my pre-pregnancy body back. I had been an actor and a dancer and was in very good shape at the time of my wedding and really had bought into the notion that you're not fully a human being in this culture without having a certain body type. And so I was overly concerned with my body and how I appeared to other people and underly concerned with the nutritional needs of my daughter. In that sort of chaos, we moved to another state in the dead of winter, and I didn't have any friends, and I just spiraled into this very dark place emotionally, and eventually I lost touch with reality and experienced a religious psychosis. And my husband was so freaked out by what he was observing with my behavior that he called my parents, and they came down to the state where we had moved to and took me back to Detroit to try to get me some medical help, because at the time, that was all they really thought that they could do. And so the psychiatric profession entered my life, and it entered with a sort of overwhelming presence that took over my life and my free choices about my free will and what I wanted to do with my body for the next 14 months. And through a series of events, I ended up in front of a judge, and I kept saying, you know, I'm nursing this baby, I can't take your medications, and they kept saying, the only way we will let you leave the hospital is if you take these medications. And so I finally succumbed and said, okay, I'll take your dope. And I was put on a cocktail of four different medications that had a devastating impact on my physical health. I have read several of Peter Breggin's books, which any of you who are involved in alternatives to medications know that he's the king of natural approaches to psychiatric care. Dr. Rima Lebeau is also a psychiatrist who I've heard that she's claimed she never has treated any of her patients with the psychiatric meds that have been pushed on our culture so intensely, especially the last 20 years. Anyway, I was forced to take these medications at a very tender age. I was 21 years old, And I took them. I took them faithfully 3 times a day. I did exactly what they told me to do. And I felt my soul sinking deeper and deeper through these layers of trauma. And the chemical effect on my brain was that I was just numbed. I was just a walking zombie. I call it my Stepford Wife time, when I just was in yes, dear mode with how I responded to my husband and my interactions with other people. My emotions were completely blunted. And week by week, I was losing hope that I would ever be mentally well again. I experienced so many of the common side effects of psychiatric meds. And a couple of months after my initial hospitalization, I went back for suicidal depression for another week into the hospital because I was so suicidal. And it was just a dark time in my life when I felt like I had no control over anything, over the substances that were being put in my body, and we had to pay all this money to these doctors who I didn't want to go see anyway. And I prayed, and I said, Father, there's got to be somebody out there who can help me, because I had seen probably 10 psychiatrists during that initial period, and I was hearing kind of the same thing from all of them. You're going to be on lithium for the rest of your life. You're manic depressive. You probably shouldn't have any more kids. Women in your situation tend to get worse and worse with each baby. It was all negative and hopeless. And it was about this time that I contacted Depression After Delivery, and I said, is there a psychiatrist out there who's got some sort of a understanding of postpartum depression and psychosis who has perhaps more natural approaches to healing this thing? And I was connected with a psychiatrist in Cincinnati who had been educating herself, and she had read some of the research that was being done by a not famous Christiane Northrup. This is 20 years ago. Christiane has since become extremely popular with her books and her writings and her videos. But Christiane believed that the best way to treat any sort of emotional problem postpartum was with natural progesterone. And this female psychiatrist said, you know, number one, we're going to take you off one of these medications, and number two, we're going to put you on some natural progesterone. And that was the first step in me starting away from this, you're going to be a medical slave for the rest of your life, and accepting this so-called diagnosis of, you know, insanity, to this woman saying, no, there's healing for you, and let's try some other things. And it was a big shift for me, and not only the hope that I felt that I could get better, but also my husband's approach to everything. She was such a laid-back person, and she really had educated herself on what was needful for a postpartum mom. And when I finally told her a couple of months after we started meeting together that I wanted to get off all of the drugs, she was supportive. And I will always be in her debt for her willingness to let me try, at least try. And she was also cognizant of the fact that I needed to wean very, very slowly off of all those medications, especially Prozac. I was on a very high dose of Prozac, and she knew that I had to come off it very gradually, that the incidence of rebound mental problems from coming off of the meds too quickly was such a risk that she didn't want me to have a rebound event. And so we got to where I was just taking one pill a week before I finally stopped all of my medications. And even when I got to that point where I took that last pill, I had this total emotional breakdown the week after, which is very common in people who are trying to come off psychiatric meds. And it definitely happened to me. It was a scary time for my husband. He felt like we were not being given good advice and I should maybe just go back on everything because that felt more safe. And I just told him I am absolutely determined that we will go down this path, because I felt in my heart that something very precious would be lost if I continued to take those medications the way that some of the doctors were telling me I needed to. Precious in the sense that I might lose full mental capacity and not be able to have any more kids. So I'm so grateful that my husband stood with me through those dark days, and also that I was working with a psychiatrist who was educated and helped me through the dark time of coming off the meds. After that time, I spent about a year doing a lot of overhauling of my diet. I had bought a wheat grinder right at the beginning of our marriage, but because I spent the next year on my couch doped up on those meds. I really didn't use it. I maybe made some pancakes once or something. But that year after it came off the drugs when my daughter was 1.5, I really got into cooking with whole foods. And it was also during this time that I made the decision to become a Bradley childbirth educator. And I had had a really good natural birth in the hospital with my first daughter. And I was so impressed by the things that I had learned in those materials that I just decided this was something I wanted to make a part of my life, if only to just educate myself. And that was a big decision for me because, again, I had been given so many labels from these doctors about who I was and what was possible, that for me to say as a 22-year-old, I'm going to become a childbirth educator, was kind of extreme given where I was at emotionally. And I'm so grateful that my husband, again, supported me in going to the training and spending a year doing the things necessary to become certified as a teacher. And I can't tell you enough how important it was for me to take that next step and have people in my home and teach them. I remember I had a panic attack the first night I was going to teach a class. I'm only 21. These people are expecting me to teach them something about birth. How can I do that, you know? And anyway, my husband helped me through that. And it really was something important in my healing to do something else besides live under the stigma of the psychiatric label. And incrementally, step by step, my husband and I got to the place where we felt like it was perhaps possible that we could have another baby. And it was not easy for either of us to get to that place. We had so many terrors and fears to overcome. And we really, truly, I don't think we've overcome them even now. It's always there. It's always kind of in the background of our lives, and that's such a shame. But that's the reality of how it is. Through those next 10 years, I gave birth to 3 more children. And by utilizing the principles of good nutrition, the things I had learned to become a Bradley teacher in terms of how I took care of myself during my pregnancy and my postpartum, I really focused on getting enough sleep. And that was crucial because during the time leading up to when I had the break from reality, I wasn't sleeping at all. I had a month where I really just did not even dream. And that right there can be a cause for a woman losing her mind. But because my husband was so focused on helping me to get my sleep and do the things I needed, felt like I needed to do to be well, I was able to make it through all of those postpartum times with no medications. I didn't even go see a psychiatrist. I was like, I don't need you people. Stay away from me. And I had these 3 more children. And it was a happy time. It was really a joyful time. I was teaching childbirth class anytime I felt like I could fit it in. I hung out a lot with ladies from my church and playgroups, and I attended the Lechi League meetings all the time. That's a breastfeeding support group. And just hung out with other young moms. And I was kind of able to shake off this persona of a mentally ill person. It was during this time when I was pregnant with my second child that we also moved to Boulder, Colorado. And there was just a different feeling in the air
all the time
in Boulder because this is kind of a natural healing mecca. It feels like there's a health food store on every corner. And I hooked up with a couple of healers, chiropractors, doulas, massage therapists, who offered tremendous help to me when I was giving birth to my babies and trying to heal various things that were befuddling me. I've always been kind of a sickly person, but during this time when I was dealing with my chronic problems of asthma, skin problems, deadly chemical and food sensitivities, these healers helped give me some real answers, and that was a great blessing. After my 4th baby was born, when he was 3 years old, we weren't quite sure if we were going to have any more kids. And so I felt myself kind of closing down that whole mommy time and starting to branch out and focus on other things. When he turned 3 years old, I weaned him, and I had been breastfeeding nonstop for 8 years. And I decided that I wanted to start writing. All along, I had felt like I was going to write my story. And when Andrew was 3 years old, this is 1999, I just started writing. And I wrote my story, A Mother's Journey, and shared it with several of my friends and family and asked them what they thought and sent it out to five different publishers to try to get it published, and they all rejected it. And in these books, this book, I wrote quite a bit about the freedom movement and how getting people on psychiatric meds was part of the communist takeover of America that had been outlined in The Naked Communist by Cleon Skousen, that this was one of their ways to try and take over our people, was to get as many of us as possible on these psychiatric meds. So my suspicion is the reason why my book was rejected for publication is not only that I was talking about those agendas, but also that I was sharing concrete and real tools that mothers could use to help them wean away from the medical profession that was standing there to help them whenever they had a nervous breakdown. So it was my brother who sat me down, and he'd been playing around with the internet for quite a while. My husband's an IT guy, and he was quite educated on what was possible with the internet. But it was my brother who said, you got to publish this book on the internet. Just put it up there as an ebook. And this is way before Amazon and Amazon Kindle and any sort of, you know, thing you could do on the internet in terms of sharing a self-published book with lots of people. But my brother was right. And I put that book up there, and it was amazing to me how many people came in and bought it. And it was just really fun and kind of empowering to think that I didn't have to deal with an editor and publishing house and all the bells and whistles of what it takes to get a book published these days. I could just put it up there myself, and that felt so good. And so I wrote another book. I wrote a book called Elijah Birth. I had been part of a group of mothers online who were really into home birth and preparedness and living the sovereign lifestyle, homeschooling and gardening and all the things that we're into. And because I'd been a childbirth educator and was quite educated on natural birth, so many of these women said, Jenny, you got to write a book, you got to write a book. So I used these women's birth stories and testimonials and put together my second book, which is called Elijah Birth. And this book is also available on Amazon's Kindle. It's basically a how-to book on unassisted childbirth. And the premise of the book is that we're living in tenuous times when the infrastructures for medicine and really for society at large are tenuous at best, and that in a matter of days or weeks, we could be without the option to go to a hospital to have all of the medications and things that they have available for us while we're giving birth to our babies, and that we should take upon ourselves the responsibility and the challenge of learning how to take care of ourselves while we're pregnant, do our own prenatal care, and give birth to our babies and just do it by ourselves. And so this was my second book, and it was about the time that I wrote this book that I decided to organize a home birth conference. We invited several of the top national speakers on this subject to come be the speakers for it, and we had families from California and Utah, Nevada, and Colorado come speak. And so it was me moving into this activist arena with the promotion of free birth, as we call it, or unassisted childbirth, that really helped me to get rubbing shoulders with lots of families, and I mean dozens and dozens of families here in Colorado and around the country through our internet connections, and just talking to them about all of this stuff, patriot issues, freedom issues, homeschooling. We homeschooled for 5 years during this time. We were just kind of hanging with the people on the fringe and the patriot side of things. It seemed like everybody was kind of into this political thing that we call the freedom movement. And I can't tell you how joyful it was to be hanging out with these people. At one point, we had seven couples here in the Boulder area. All of them, except for one, were Mormon families, and they were all preparing unassisted births. And we weren't all necessarily in the same congregation, but we would get together socially and support each other and then just try to help around the births of the babies, bring food and take care of children and stuff like that while the babies were being born. And again, it was pure joy, and it felt like we were really onto something, that we were We were making a difference in our own lives, and we were pulling away from this infrastructure that each year that clicked by was just getting more and more insane. I've watched it pretty closely because of my profession, but the C-section rate has just gotten completely out of control. There are some hospitals in America where 80% of the mothers are giving birth by C-section, and to me that is a travesty, and it's a blight on not only our nation, but on the medical profession and where they've gone with the rules of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. And I've had to wonder over the years if that impression I had back in 1989 when I was just a brand new mom, when Jesus was telling his disciples this is going to be a scary time for women who are pregnant and nursing, if he meant not only because there was going to be wars and rumors of wars and natural disasters and earthquakes and all the natural disasters, but if perhaps he also saw that things were going to get rather nutty with the medical profession and that he wanted us to have a safe place to flee to get out from under the thumb of this Babylonian behemoth that some people, like Leonard Horowitz and others like him, have read that symbolic language in the book of Revelations, and they've just flat out said this sorcery that they're talking about in the book of Revelations is the medical profession. So I've had to think about that a lot and wonder, is that really what's going on here? Is it really what the Savior was warning us against? And I think it probably was. I don't have any evidence or, final word on that topic, but my gut feeling is yeah. And it's because of their own statistics and their own horrifying impact that they're having on the lives of the families who use everything they have to offer. And when I say everything, I mean vaccines, antibiotics, the medicated birth, the bottle feeding instead of mama's milk, the whole medical behemoth that stands there and says, here we are, use us. And by the way, we're the only people out there who have something to offer your family, and anybody else, if you want to go to a midwife or you want to use a doula or you want to do it yourself, then you're crazy and we're going to come prosecute you for medical neglect because we're the only game in town. But, you come use everything we have to offer and you're going to have a great, healthy family and a wonderful life. Well, you know what? The people in my personal life who do every single thing that their medical professionals around them tell them to do have had the most horrifying experiences. They've had the most sickly babes and the most traumatic births and the most incidents of autism and mental illness with their children as they've medicated and medicated at every juncture of these poor kids' lives. And at the end of the day, you really have to step back and look at all of it and say, what is going on? And frankly, that is what this radio show is going to be about, is questioning what is going on and are there any alternatives that are legitimate and available for families at their disposal that are cost effective, that can fit into a family budget, especially if the mother wants to be at home with her children, and will give them this abundant healing and happiness and healthy babies. That's what we all want. That's the end game for all of us. We just want a healthy baby. That's even what the medical people say. It's all about the healthy baby. Well, the question that has to be asked is, what is the best way for us to create a healthy family? And do I, as an individual mother, have the right to make healthcare decisions for and in behalf of my children without any worry or concern that some medical busybody or social worker or policeman or judge or lawyer or anyone out there, some idiot government bureaucrat, is going to step into my little sphere, my little circle of sovereignty around my family and say, you're an unfit parent. You can't do that. We're taking your kids away. That, to me, is the ultimate question today. And it ties into what's happening with this health care bill. There are so many things being written into this bill that will rob parents of their sovereignty, you can't even hardly list them all. And when you really get down to the nitty-gritty of it and see that at every juncture of our lives, they're going to have a pill, a vaccine, a psychiatric medication, a medical procedure, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, waiting for us. And if we choose not to use it, they're going to have all the coercive power that they want to force us to use it. And freedom's over in America. There's really nothing there but for any of us but medical slavery. And it's why it is so crucial that these people be stood up to and confronted and then, hopefully, held accountable, not just for the crimes that have already taken place for individual families, but for the agendas, the long-term agendas and the long-term vision that they have for what they have to offer us, what we're going to be forced to pay for, and how we're going to live our day-to-day lives. Again, this radio show, every week, I'm going to be talking about the tangible ways that you as individual mothers and fathers can use to wean yourself from the infrastructures that are there to, quote, help you with your family life to get to where you are completely self-sufficient. And I'm in a position to share that information with you because, by and large, my husband and I have done it. And it has been the craziest journey you could – who knew that this journey would start in a Michigan State mental hospital? But you know what? That's where it started. And I think if it hadn't been that traumatic and that extreme for me, I never would have taken the time to read all of the books out there on psychiatric freedom, the books by Peter Breggin, Toxic Psychiatry, Talking Back to Prozac, the book about Prozac by Anne Blake Tracy, Prozac, Pandia, or Panacea. I never, ever would have given these books the time of day if I hadn't been so motivated by the death sentence that I was given back at the beginning of my adult life. And it's difficult for me to deal with the dumping that's kind of taken place from various members of my family or friends who implied that I was medically mismanaged the past 20 years because I haven't taken any medications and I should have been on drugs for that whole time and they're worried about me or worried about my kids. You know, the people you guys need to worry about are those who are taking all the pills because they're the ones who are having the psychotic episodes and going and blowing up the schools and shooting up their neighbors and killing their kids, you know. Andrea Yates down in Texas, who drowned her 5 children, was on outrageous amounts of antidepressants when she committed that crime. And that is a theme over and over and over again we see with these poor mothers who get in over their heads with their mothering and do the almost impossible to our conscious minds to realize that they've killed their own kids. But these are the women who are having the hard times, the ones who are so doped up they can't even see straight. So, you know, it's been difficult for me to kind of stand up for myself and advocate for myself and advocate for other people when I feel like I'm constantly under the microscope myself. But, you know, at some level in all of this walking away from the herd, you have to just deal with that sort of judgment and let it go and just say, I'm going to make the decisions that I believe are best for me, for my own children, and then live with the consequences of that choice, which for some families, there is some social rejection when you make the decision to homeschool or to not vaccinate. Or I know that there's certainly been that attitude towards me from some people, oh, you don't vaccinate your kids, well, you probably shouldn't come to our playgroup, or I really don't want your kids in my home because they're, quote, you know, this petri dish of disease because they're not vaccinated. And you just, you know, that's part of it. You just have to deal with it. And that's difficult, but it's not more difficult than having a kid who's bouncing off the walls with autistic symptoms. So I'll take the social rejection and happily live with the consequences of my choice.
Hey Jenny, you know, this probably, if you haven't heard my voice yet, this is Eric from, I've been watching the switchboard for you, and you actually have a caller.
Oh, great.
Or area code, if you would like to take that call. Would that be okay with you?
That would be great.
Okay, well, I'm going to make that caller live. If you have a question for Jenny, just go ahead and shoot. Introduce yourself to everybody here on the Freedomizer Radio, and you're now live with Jenny.
Hi, this is Rusty. I'd like to talk about unassisted birth at home.
Okay.
I have some experience with unassisted birth. The other day I took a 7-pound shit in my house. It was really painful.
Sounds like that guy was a little bit
hostile. I'd scare him, Jenny. He's already muted and done.
Okay.
You know. And
yeah.
I can deal with something like that. You know, we don't mind letting people express their opinions and things here on the show, but, you know, to do something like that, I mean, people really need to grow up and get with what the show is. But go ahead,
well,
Jenny. I'll leave the floor back to you.
Thank you. We had planned when I talked to Doc and to Proof that this first show I wouldn't take any callers just so I could kind of ease my way into being a radio host. So in these final 15 minutes, the final thing I would like to share is that we are on a trajectory as a society. And there are a lot of people who have been whistleblowers, especially over the last 50 years, who've been screaming their heads off about the United Nations, the depopulation agendas that are very much a part of the UN. All you have to do is go to their own website and read their own literature. It's there. And we really have to pull our heads out of the sand and recognize that there are some global elitists who want to deprive us of the ability to welcome our children into our homes and have the families that we were destined to have, and that means more than one baby, and live free from the infrastructures that are out there to deprive us of our freedom. And it's kind of an exciting time in the sense that I don't think the patriots of 20 years ago could even comprehend something as complex and empowering as the Internet. And I believe that the Internet, combined with the United States Constitution, is the tool that is going to help us free ourselves from all of these various groups that, you know, they got set in place pretty much right after the founders wrote the Constitution. Heck, some of them were even in place before the American Revolution, doing their thing, manipulating the economy, setting up wars. These things have been going on for generations. And they've largely kept themselves hidden from view for decades. And over the last 10 years, there's been a big change in terms of people's awareness of these elites' agendas for our families. And it all comes down to the murder and killing of little babies. I love Ann Coulter. She just cracks me up. And she said in one of her books that the fullness of the Democrat Party is a solar-powered abortion machine. And it just cracked me up because it's so true. So many of these agendas just push towards the sterilizing of women and the limiting of our family size and the licensing of children and zero population and really just manipulating family life. And I, for a time, I see that, frankly, getting worse, especially if they're is some way that or means that they are able to implement even a portion of this health care bill. And we really need to take an honest look at what we as individual families can do to prepare for a time of complete top-down tyranny and control over our family lives and how can we live free. There are so many stories in the scriptures, starting with Moses, of the government's coming in to kill all the babies, and what do we do? Well, Moses' mother built a basket and sent him down the river, and hopefully we won't have to go to that extreme in order to have our babies. When Jesus was born, the Lord told Joseph, flee into Egypt. There it's safe. Your baby won't be killed. I pray that it doesn't come to that in America. But those things are happening in China right now, and when a woman has the audacity to get pregnant with a second child, many of those mothers are forced to be sterilized, and those babies quite often are forced to be aborted. And that is such a travesty. And to have that reality play out in America, to me, would just be a living nightmare. But there are those who are pushing for that agenda, and we need to prepare for that. And one of the ways that the elites could have that type of control is, okay, I go into the hospital to give birth to my baby, and without my permission, somebody slips me a drug, or while I'm having a C-section, they cut my tubes, or whatever, because they think I'm not worthy to have another child. And those are harsh realities, but they're realities that we really need to consider as we're preparing for our family life and welcoming these children. I feel more safe, more protected, more in control of my life, having the skills to keep me away from those infrastructures than I would if I was completely caught up in those lifestyles and had no skills, which, unfortunately, that's where the vast majority of our young mothers are today. They're so tied to those infrastructures that when I mentioned to some of these young mothers, oh, yeah, I had a home birth, I've had two of them say, oh, I didn't know you could get an epidural at home. Does that mean the doctor comes to your home and gives you the drug? And I said, no, it means I don't give birth without any drugs. And they could not comprehend that a mother could give birth without that little catheter stuck in her spine. And to me, that is such a travesty that these young girls believe that that is the only way or means of giving birth, is if you're completely doped up and in a hospital setting. So we have some work to do in terms of educating our young mothers. And I don't really care if the vast majority of mothers never get into the sovereign lifestyle. You know, we're all free to choose to live the type of life that we want to live. But I want to make for darn certain that those families out there who want to live this lifestyle have the freedom to make these choices for and in behalf of their own children without being bullied or locked up or having their kids taken away for medical neglect. That is the vision that I have and the hope that I have in this freedom movement. And it's the direction that we're heading. And I pray, because of my example, that others will feel drawn to it. That's already been taking place with the circles of friends I have in my day-to-day life and on the internet. But, you know, honestly, I don't care if people choose to do these things or not. I care that I have the freedom to do them, or that my daughters or granddaughters have the freedom to do that, to give birth where they want, to have as many children as they want, to have the freedom to not give their children vaccines, to not take psychiatric meds, to keep them away from the educational system if they want to educate them with the things that they feel are important rather than what some educational bureaucrat thinks is important. Those are the things that I'm fighting for every day on my blog and on this radio show and in all of my writings. And I hope that those of you who are listening will join in to recognize that that's where we need to be in the freedom movement, is pushing for any sort of politician or legislation that will free families to live the lifestyle they want to live. Because if we lose this thing, if we lose this thing called family freedom, I think it'll probably be a couple of generations before we get it back. And if ever, you know, if we get complete tyranny, history has shown that it's the socialistic thing has a 50-year cycle. And 50 years of medical slavery for the American people is a nauseating and a frightening thing. So that is what this show is going to be about. And as the final message for tonight's show, we've got about 5-6 minutes left, I would just like to challenge all of you to look at your day-to-day life. And if you're a mom, if you're a dad, instead of thinking about what you can do for your child or your grandchild or your neighbor, I want you to think about what you can do as an individual to make yourself more independent from things that you might be enslaved to in your day-to-day life. When I started down my path, my husband was taking all sorts of medications. He went through a bottle of Tums every week because he had horrible digestive problems. He'd been taking daily aspirin for years and years and years. And it would have been really easy for me, as I was educating myself on all of these things to do for my own health, to look at him and say, well, you need to do this, and you need to, and guess what this guy says, and this is how you need to live well. And I'm really glad I didn't do that. I just made the decision that I was going to work on my own body and my own health and wean off of the medications that I was addicted to, and just set a good example for him. And if he chose to go down that path with me, great. And if he didn't, I don't care. I'm going to love him anyway. I've made sacred covenants with him for our marriage that we were going to be together, and I was going to love him sick or healthy or sick. And I just needed to focus on myself. And it is human nature that when we get a little bit of information, we start thinking about all the people who we can fix with this information. And I want to testify to you that the most important person for you to fix is yourself. And that when you take the time to get off the various substances that you're addicted to and replace those substances with whole foods and pure water and pure nutrition, and then start exercising and sleeping well and doing the things that lead to true health, that your example will influence everybody around you. And that it is one of the most important ways for you as an individual to live free. I have certainly experienced that. As I've gone through all these years, it's been 21 years since I completely lost my physical and my mental health to today, to where I'm pretty much weaned from everything. And that includes asthma medication and antihistamines that I was taking all the time for all of my allergies. I have gotten to the point where I don't need those medications anymore. I do keep an EpiPen in my purse and an inhaler with me in case I get into anaphylaxis, because I'm still sick. I mean, I'm still sick with these chronic things. But I don't have to use my inhaler every day. I don't have to use the antihistamines when I have an allergy attack. I can use vitamin C, or I can use lavender oil, or the different substances that God placed on the earth to help us with our healing instead of all of these drugs. And that has been so empowering. And if you as an individual will do that for yourself and then set an example for the people around you, that is one of the most powerful things you can do to combat this medical slavery that literally is at every juncture of our human life. It's so interesting to me when I read the various books about Russia and China. I love the writings of Pearl Buck. She wrote this fabulous book called Dragon Seed, in which she just documents in a novel. It's a fiction book, but she documents the Japanese invasion of China at the beginning of World War II and what took place as the communists eventually took over China. And what they were feeding the people during that takeover was drugs. Everywhere on every street corner was the opium, and they were just trying to keep the people high and not able to fight back in this kind of doped up, sedated state. And we are at the exact same place in our society where the elites are trying to do everything in their power to keep us numb and mindless and obedient. And if anybody steps out of line, we're going to smack you around and push you back in. And we need to stand up to that. And the number one way we can do that is by taking personal responsibility for our own health and getting off these medications, getting onto nutrition, and then we'll be able to think clearly and be able to be more effective. That's my witness and my testimony. It's what I've experienced. And I believe if you'll take the time to do that, that you will live freer than if you continue on with your medical slavery. It looks like we're about out of time now. Matt, are you still there?
I just got the 90-second marker, so.
Okay, great. Doc said that he was going to run an ad right at the end of my show, so if you want to run that ad, tell Proof I'm here. I was going to be a co-host on his show. I can call into the co-host line, or I can just stay on this line. It's up to you guys. And I just want to say a big hearty goodbye to everybody who's listening.
Yeah, since we're pretty much all jumbled together, what I have to actually do is close out the switchboard so they can generate the next show, so you'll be able to either call back in the same number or call in as the co-host. However you guys had it set up to function, I just popped in to run the switchboard for you, but we do have to close out so we can generate the next show. So
all right, I'll hang up and I'll call in as a co-host, okay?
Okay, well, make sure real quick before you do that, take maybe 10 seconds and plug your YouTube page and or your time slot that you're going to be taking here on the Freedomizer Radio, and then I will be closing it out.
All right. The Jenny Hat Show is going to be on every Tuesday night at 5 o'clock California time, 6 o'clock Colorado time, where I am here in Boulder. And my blog is naturalfamilyblog.com, although just yesterday I think I was hacked and my blog is down, but I'm working overtime to get it back up, and I look forward to seeing you all here at the Freedomizer Network every week.